Howdy, welcome back to the Thriving Holistic Practitioner podcast. Can I just start by telling you how excited I am? I'm thrilled. I'm just tickled. We just wrapped up a three-day workshop called Organize Your Practice, and it was so much fun. My goodness, my business partner, Emily Tornator, and I hosted this three-day workshop to help practitioners get a grip, I guess you could say, get a grip on their business, organizing it. And, you know, it was funny because after we were done, one of the participants said, she goes, you know what, this is one of those things that I put off all the time because it feels so daunting. I never want to just dig in and do it. But once we got started, I realized it just wasn't that big of a deal. And I'm so glad I did it. And I was telling Emily, I said, you know what, to me, it's like in the movie The Incredibles, when Mrs. Incredible or Mrs. Parr calls Bob and says, Bob, it's official. We've moved in. And she's like, I've unpacked the last box. You know, it's like how many of us have moved and then we just have that one pesky box that we never want to get to. We just leave it there and leave it there until we finally maybe get around to unpacking it. That's what it's like when it comes to organizing a business. It's like that last box that you just don't want to unpack. But when you do, it brings so much freedom into your business and into your life. And it's just so powerful. It's truly incredible. Har, har, har. Pun intended. That wasn't really a pun, but you get it. That was a joke. I know my jokes are corny. You'll get used to me. The more you go. Anyway, I'm excited to tell you about our guest today, Amy Gallo. Amy and I hit it off. She's originally from Alaska, and her father was an immigrant, but she just learned so much from him that carried into her journey as a holistic practitioner. Later, she and her husband moved to Oregon, which is kind of in my neck of the woods because I'm here in North Idaho. So we had a lot. I just felt like kindred spirits. But what's really amazing about Amy's story is that she and her husband picked up and moved all the way to Spain. I know, right? Huge shift. And she was able to take her business with her. So we dive into what that process was like. What has it been like to establish a practice in a foreign country? And what does that whole transition look like for her son too? We touched on that. So dig in. I hope you enjoy it. And by the way, if you want to catch the replay to the three-day workshop, that is available to you for the next week. So dig in. There's a Facebook group that we did it in, and that's below. If you get a chance to get in there and watch the replay, I really encourage you to do that. Otherwise, you can catch us on the next round. We'll be doing it again in about a month and a half. Okay, guys, thanks for tuning in. Let's get started.
Hey, everybody. I'm your host, Lindsay Sutherland. I'm excited to have you here with us today. Also joining us is Amy Gallo, who is a double degree nutritionist and health coach. She has been helping people claim and recover their health and vitality for more than 20 years. Originally from Washington, she's now living in Spain, and she's here to talk about that journey as well. And the name of her company is Vibrance Nutrition and Fitness. So Amy, thank you so much for joining us. I'm excited for this conversation.
I am too. I'm really happy to be here.
Yay. So let's start. Just tell us a little bit about your journey, how you embarked upon the holistic path, and just some of those foundational, you know, things that you might have gone through.
How did I end up here?
Yes.
I when I was 12 years old, and I grew up in Alaska, I spent my childhood in Alaska and then came down to Washington State for college. And as a young child in Alaska, I was in a bookstore one day and stumbled upon a book called 101 Ways to Save the Animals. I was about 12 years old at the time, and I thought it was going to be about dolphin-safe tuna and saving the rainforest. And it was written by the founder of People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. So it was about fur farms and animal testing and how food is raised in the United States, specifically meat. And I come from a family of animal lovers, and I was completely aghast at this revelation of the commercial feedlot operating systems that we have in the States. And so I decided to go vegetarian shortly thereafter. And there were some family members who were concerned about particularly my iron levels and protein intake. And in my adolescent mind, I was like, well, the entire country of India is vegetarian, so it's got to be fine. But I needed to prove my case. So I set out to the library and started reading. And that's when I discovered the profound impact that nutrition has on our quality of life and our longevity. And it is a rabbit hole from which I never emerged. Unlike Alice from Alice in Wonderland, I stayed in Wonderland. And I have been enamored with the field ever since and have been really fortunate to have been able to build my career doing something that I feel still so strongly and passionately about.
That is incredible. I think you're probably the first. Now, mind you, I think you're only like the seventh or eighth person I've talked to on the podcast, but the first, and in my even external life, beyond podcasting, who's started out so young with like knew their mission so early on in life and then evolved from there. That is so cool.
Oddly, my husband is the only other person I know.
Oh, no kidding. That is so neat. And I'm curious, what is his, is he also into food and nutrition or is he in?
He's not. No, I know. I mean, he's a foodie. He loves eating food and he loves eating good food. So we work really well in that regard. But he received one of the very first Apple computers in the 80s and learned how to program as a young child and was creating his own programming languages in high school. And so he's been a programmer, a web programmer and developer since the very beginning.
No kidding. That's powerful. I love that. What a cool story. Okay. So you got into this bunny trail. This was a personal interest. You were doing this for yourself. When did you decide that this was going to evolve into a career path? Obviously, I'm sure when you got a little older and started wondering about how to make money in the world.
Yeah. I knew by about age 14 or 15 that this is what I wanted to do. And when I was in high school, I volunteered at the hospital with the registered dietitians. And I emerged from that experience saying, nutrition, yes, hospitals, no, absolutely not. So I knew that preventative care was always going to be where I would be and that I didn't want to go through the hospital system. So I never actually ended up becoming a registered dietitian. I obtained my nutrition degree my first degree in 2004, and then started what I called nutrition coaching. Because at that point in time, the word health coach didn't actually exist yet. So I became a nutrition coach and I was giving people general guidance on healthy eating. I started off working for the clients of my running coach. And so immediately began in the field of weight loss as well as endurance sports nutrition. And because they don't teach you anything about running a business in college, I fell flat on my face pretty rapidly. I had no idea how to run a business. I didn't feel comfortable marketing myself because I wasn't a registered dietitian. And we were told in college, that's the only thing that's going to be respected. Nobody will listen to you unless you're an RD. The truth is, none of my clients ever asked for my degree or my qualifications. They just wanted to feel better. But it was really ingrained in my mind. So about 2 years after I finished college, I went to the Institute for Integrative Nutrition to get my health coaching degree or my health coaching certification, excuse me. And that I was motivated to go there because they had part of their program was how to teach you to get a practice up and running. So you would learn from a variety of teachers, visiting teachers, many of whom were my childhood heroes, like Walter Willett and Dean Ornish and Sally Fallon. So I was drawn by actually meeting these people in person. That was like amazing. And then they were going to actually teach me how to market myself, how to get clients, how to make this work. And that was a game changer for me. That really gave me the confidence to be able to go out and help people. I didn't need to have industry approval to make a difference. And that was key for me.
Okay, for those of you listening, I want you to write this down. I'm doing it with you. I don't need industry approval to make a difference. I think that is such a key thing, and not even just in the holistic space, because I've been doing this a long time in the internet and online space. And I think the same thing stands to reason there. Oh, well, I'm not certified in SEO, or I'm not certified in
Right.
funnel creation, yada, yada. And so we think we need to go get all these certifications and trainings and so on to set our worth. But if you can legitimately make a difference with what you know, you have a starting point. And that's the
Exactly.
key thing there. Another thing that you mentioned too that I want to highlight, you probably don't really realize what that is a joint venture. And I think that's a really great way for beginning practitioners to start. You said that you were doing nutrition coaching for a fitness coach or somebody in that genre. That's a great way to start leveraging. It's called leveraging other people's audiences. And of course, that was probably before podcasts were super popular, if they were even a thing yet. I think YouTube was just getting started in the early 2000s. So it wouldn't have made sense to leverage other people's audiences in ways we can today. And it's now becoming an overlooked business strategy because we're also focused on social media and podcasting and YouTube guesting and all these things that we're forgetting something as simple as building strategic partnerships and creating a win-win relationship. So I think that's a really key thing to highlight.
I agree, and I've been largely reluctant isn't the quite the word. Antagonistically resentful of being told that in order to build a following, I need to be online, I need to be buying ads, I need to be doing this, that, and the other. It doesn't fit my personality. I don't like marketing in that sense. It doesn't feel authentic to me. I don't like receiving ads. Why would I want to be contributing to that? And so for me personally, anyway, it doesn't feel good to do that. And every time I've tried, because I've been told this is what you're supposed to do, I just end up angry and resentful. The we really in this very modern digital age have forgotten the power of that personal connection in real time in life, human to human. Because everything is so focused online. We're online learning, looking, reading, trying to get this information. And all of the people who are online are telling us to stay there. But our community is filled with amazing people who know people that could completely fill your practice if you make really good, authentic connections and you two have an aligned mission.
100%. That sums up joint ventures perfectly. I couldn't have said it better. It was great. I know. And the scary thing is, I think we're just going into the mindset of that. A lot of times people think, oh, well, they won't talk to me, or I don't know how to start that conversation. And I always encourage people to just think, if you were to bump into this person, say at a networking event, or it could be not even a networking event, it could just be a wellness event, and you just become what? Friends. You build a friendship. I think like if we just take the emphasis on the what's in it for me or them and trying to get something like that result, and we just focus on building the relationship, it's an organic process that really is beautiful and it can evolve with right before our eyes, it's really fun and it's almost magical. It's like actually the fun part of business, I think, is by
Definitely.
that.
And
So
it's worth saying it takes time. It takes time. Just as we don't really like it if we're going on a date and on the second date, the person is like, when do you want to move in together? Neither do we appreciate being on the receiving end of someone who appears to be pursuing the friendship for personal gain, right? So you meet someone, there's a spark, there's a potential there, feel it out, get to know each other, have fun. If it isn't a business setting, like a networking setting, then of course it makes sense to bring it up, just like a serious dating site that advertises finding a marriage partner is a situation where you would bring up that serious subject quickly. But otherwise, don't be surprised if it takes a year and a half, 2 years. I've been in the game long enough that I have seen inklings of things be rooted, but not actually sprout and bear fruit for 3, 4, even 5 years down the road. And that's okay. And oftentimes when they do bear fruit, it's really juicy.
Hey, yes, I love that. Okay, well, let's dive into that a little more. So you decided to start your practice, and then you got your second certificate. Was it a certification or a degree, that second one that
It
taught about?
was a certification in health coaching.
Okay, that's right. And then they talked a little bit about business. How did that, how did what was like one big takeaway that kind of got you launched into the next phase of your business?
I think the thing that really helped me out was I think it really was the majority of it was the mindset of basically get over yourself. People need your help. Get to it. And forget about not being an RD. That doesn't matter. People won't ask you. They don't care. They just want to feel better. And fortunately, I was in a place where I could internalize that and receive it, and then boom, go out. Additionally, they taught us to leverage using free talks and workshops and then paid talks and workshops to gather clients. This was, very much at the early stages of social media, and so most things were still being done in person in real time. Obviously, talks and workshops transition very easily to the internet, especially now that we're post-pandemic and all very, very accustomed to being on Zoom. And that is still an excellent way to broaden your audience, to make collaborative connections. And that has kind of been a seed that has stayed with me throughout wherever I've been. When there is someone or there's an alignment there and we have some overlap, how can we create a win-win situation together?
I love it. Okay, so when did you feel like your practice started to get legs, so to speak? It really was taking off, and were there any new challenges that kind of crept up for you at
Oh,
that time?
yes.
Okay.
Life has not been short of challenges for me. So things really started taking off, I would say, around 2006, 2007. It's going really, really well. And then in late 2007, I experienced a soul-crushing breakup that really shook me and definitely impacted my ability to work. I was absolutely devastated. And I ended up leaving Seattle for a while and moving to San Diego to do some personal work with a friend that I'd actually met at the health coaching certification program that I had done. And shortly after I moved to San Diego, the economy completely crashed. That the 2008 recession happened. So I was in a new city. I didn't know anybody. The economy was utter crap. Seattle fared fairly well, but California was definitely hit. The San Diego area was. At that point, I transitioned to virtual coaching because I did have clients in Seattle still, and so I started doing phone coaching. And I was able to maintain some small a small client load after I had moved. And I joined meetups. I joined running meetups and to establish myself in the community just to meet people, right? And that ended up allowing me to be established as a sports nutritionist in San Diego to work with some people there. Later, I met a naturopathic doctor, rented some office space for her from her, and then that also allowed me to expand a little bit more. And I just essentially that was the first time I rebuilt.
The
And
first time. I love that.
Yeah, the first time I rebuilt. It's not a linear journey, folks. But each challenge, each setback, each surprise, when you come through it, you are more resilient, more robust, and also more humbled. And I think that ultimately allows you to stay in the game when everyone around you quits. I really think success in business ultimately is being about the most stubborn, determined person in the group.
That's very powerful too. You got me thinking today. It's this kind of, you never notice how like certain themes come up Today's theme is flight or fight. And somebody I was just interviewing was talking about that. She doesn't probably even know this came up for me, and my brain went off on this bunny trail from our conversation. But she was talking about the parasympathetic nervous system and just kind of how she was healing that in her practice and journey and blah, that kind of story. And she made that comment about her fight or flight and how overactive nervous systems can affect our mindset and our future and so on. And it got me thinking. I'm like, I never really thought about that. But if I look at even my own mindset, some of my biggest struggles come from having a more tendency to flight than fight. And what that does is it makes us want to just quit, right? And whereas that fight symptom, or I don't know if it's not a symptom, but a strategy, I guess, that our body's designed to do, would then put us where we would just put all in. We would just focus even heavier. There's just this difference in the way of thinking goes about it. If it's not easy, I'm not going to keep trying. And I think that's a really, I haven't even fully digested that concept, but it's just coming up. And then what you said makes sense. It's like the one who stays in the longest is most likely to come out ahead. How do you think? I mean, it sounds to me like maybe, and maybe running was part of this for you, or your fitness mentality that push through to the end, even when it's tough. Maybe that kind of set that stage for you. Or do you think maybe there was something else that helped you keep your dog in the fight, so to speak?
There are a couple of things that come to mind. I think definitely being an endurance runner has played a part. I couldn't deny that. More deeply, though, I would say that I think the root of it ultimately comes from my family. So my father is an immigrant. He moved to the United States from Mexico when he was about 15, didn't speak any English, didn't know anything, started off cleaning toilets, bussing tables, things of that nature. And he moved up, he just looked for opportunities and took advantage of them when they came his way. And so he began buying cars and fixing them and then selling them for extra money. He once lied about his work position. He was a prep cook in a restaurant, and there was somebody scouting recruits to take them up to Alaska because Alaska needed workers, and they were looking for line cooks. And my dad was like, "Oh yeah, I'm a line cook. I could do that." And so then he ends up in Alaska. And from there, he worked in the restaurant business for a long time and then ended up buying his own restaurants. And now he has 12. I lost count a while ago. He's a very successful businessman, and his tenacity, his drive, his willingness not to take no for an answer, his extreme workaholism also has modeled what I don't want to do. But I had an example in my living room of what could happen if you put your mind to it. And knowing where he came from, in a small ranch town in the middle of Mexico, in a stone house with dirt floors, and who he's become and what he's accomplished, I have no excuses, right? Like, there's no, just because it's, I can't expect life to be easy. I don't think that's a recipe for disaster, because even in the most privileged country in the world, life isn't easy. So I think that has been a significant part, and just stay with it, stay with it, stay with it. If you get knocked down, you get back up, because that's just what you do. However, that said, I love this field so much. I don't know what I would do if I wasn't doing this. And so, in that sense, I almost have removed choice from the table. And so all I can do is keep doing what I'm doing, whether I make $2,000 a month or $15,000 a month. I just need to do what I got to do, because that is why I'm here.
Oh, good stuff. Okay, let's get to the part about how you evolved again in your business and are able to now travel Europe and be have this nomadic lifestyle. Kind of, I guess, If you can guide us through quickly, like your journey and where that led to, and how you were able to make that transition.
I became a parent, and becoming a parent really shifted things from me. Growing a, six, seven figure business was no longer my top priority. It was really about making sure, like, this wonderful human that I brought into the world would do well. And so with that, I wanted a backup plan. And that's why I went back to school for my master's degree, was because in the state of Washington, if you have a master's degree in nutrition, the state will license you as a certified nutritionist. You can accept insurance, you can work in clinics, although you definitely have fewer options than a registered dietitian, but there are work opportunities there. And I wanted to make sure that I wanted to make sure that I had an option for employment so that my business didn't take me away from my child. Because as the child of business owners, I did have firsthand experience of spending a lot of time alone because my parents were working very, very hard to keep the business afloat during the recession of the 80s. And there simply wasn't much time, right, to devote to things outside the business. So, 2020 rolls along, and I implement that backup plan because things were very unstable. My child was at home. He was falling apart. I didn't know how long he was going to be home. Nobody knew what was going on. And a friend of mine that I went to grad school with was needing, she was about to go on maternity leave, and they needed to have someone, a second nutritionist in their clinic, in their medical clinic. And they were looking for people. And I was like, tell me more. And she was like, I didn't think you'd be interested. And I said, I could be bought for a price. So I did work in a medical clinic, an obesity medicine and metabolic health clinic for 3 years. It was fantastic. It exposed me to so much more than I can be exposed to when I'm in a cash-based private practice. We accepted Medicaid, Medicare, and so we saw all kinds of people from all walks of life. It was a glorious experience. And I was with very supportive medical professionals who believed in what we did. And that is also not to be expected in the field of nutrition. So it was beautiful. However, I was really coming up against this reality that how my child was being raised, how I was able to raise my child in one of the more expensive cities in the United States, which we had decided at some point was the last city in the States that we wanted to live in if we were going to stay in the States, suddenly became too untenable, too unrealistic. It was, we choose to have a retirement fund or we choose quality education for our son. We bust our butts and he's still socially isolated. And it wasn't what we wanted for him. It wasn't what we wanted for ourselves. Because I had been virtual to some, if 50 to 100% of my private practice since what, 2008, no biggie. All I needed to do was leave my clinic position that I was working at part-time, and then I was free. My husband, being in tech, their office shut down in March of 2020. It still hasn't opened up. He still works for that company, but from here in Spain. And so it became very clear that we want something else for our family. We want something else for our son. And we are in a very fortunate position to be able to do it. And we need to do it soon because I think that the point that we decided to leave the States, he was turning 8. And I wanted him out before he turned 10, before he entered adolescence, before his friendship groups became, from light into like very deep, deep friendships. So we were like, all right, let's figure out how to make this happen. Let's find a place to go and let's go. Because I'm half Mexican, my Latin roots are important to me. I was not able to be fluent in Spanish because my father was learning English. And so we only spoke English in the home. And my mother's American. And I don't want my son to have the challenges in language connecting to family that I have had for the whole of my life. So moving to a country that spoke Spanish was important. Mexico did not inspire a great deal of confidence in me in terms of how it's run, in terms of safety issues. As much as I deeply, deeply love that country, it's so culturally rich and beautiful. I have family down there. It felt like a lateral move at best, and I really wanted something better. And so Spain just sort of slowly emerged from the top. It was not on my list. It wasn't on my husband's list. We weren't ever thinking about Spain, but it just showed up. And so we decided, let's do it.
That
And
is
then we decided, well, before we do it, maybe we should go visit Spain and see if we actually like it.
And did you?
I did. I actually got the lawyer first, decided we were going to move, and then put the brakes on because I was working at the clinic and maintaining a private practice and preparing to move to Spain in 6 months. And that's not a thing. Don't, it's not a thing. It doesn't happen that way. So I hit the pause button and we decided to spend a month in Spain. I took a sabbatical from work to make sure that this was really the right choice. And so we came here, immediately just felt like, oh gosh, yes, this whole vibe works a lot better for us. We found an incredible school for my son, that was a third of the cost of what we were paying in Seattle and offered him so much more. If we stay here, by the time he finishes high school, he'll know five languages, have opportunities to travel to other countries on student exchange programs. There's like tennis courts and swimming pools at this school. It's nuts.
Wow.
And for so much less than what we were paying in the States. And then it was a non-issue at that point. We took a tour to the school. It's like, well, I guess we're moving to that town, however that town is. And that was it. And came home and started selling things. I left my position at the clinic, which was heartbreaking because I loved it there and I love my patients so much. But my son comes first, and my family's health comes first. So I left and spent the final 3, 4 months in the States just devoted to getting rid of everything we own and settling our affairs as best we could, and then finding a place to live once we got here and settling the whole visa process too, which is a crazy adventure.
Yeah, I can imagine. That's incredible. And I love you, that you shared your journey on how you figured out Spain was the way. I was going to ask you that because I think there's a lot of people who desire that laptop lifestyle and that freedom to travel, but then there's the whole, what is it really like actually taking that plunge? Like it sounds really romantic, but then what is it like to do it? So it's really neat. It's really neat that you did. How did, you know, since your son didn't know English, what was the school like? Did they, I mean, didn't know English, didn't know Spanish at the time. Did they have teachers that spoke English to help him make that transition into speaking Spanish full time, or how did that work?
Yeah, so we've been here for 8 months. We're still very new to the country, and he's in a Montessori school here in Spain, and he's always been in a Montessori school. And so it was important for me that wherever we ended up, that his school methodology stayed the same, because it's such a significant disruption anyway, that if his school was the same and he was familiar with how that all went, it would be one less thing for him to have to adapt to. So we found this incredible Montessori school, and at the school, they teach the students English, Spanish, Catalan, German, and French, optional Mandarin in high school if you want it. But the kids start practicing in Spanish and English and Catalan in the early grades, kindergarten, first grade. So his teacher does speak English pretty fluently. And so entering into the school, he's been allowed to read books in English. He gets some of the lessons are in Spanish, or the lessons are in Catalan. He gets Spanish lessons because we've requested an emphasis on Spanish versus Catalan. It's a choice you can make when you enroll your son in the school. And now he told me today, he's like, my teacher says that when we get back from Semana Santa, which is our spring break that's happening this week, that she wants me to start reading books in Spanish. And I'm like, well, that's great. Like, you're doing so well. You're ready to read books in Spanish. It's fantastic.
Yeah,
And of
really.
course,
8 months in. That's incredible.
So he's picking up the language and he's much more immersed in it than his father and I are. So he's picking it up rather quickly, which is wonderful. And the school, it's not an international school. It is a local Spanish private school. However, about 10% of the student population are foreigners. So he has friends who are from America, or they're half American, half Spanish, and friends from Russia, and also Spanish and Catalan friends as well.
That's so cool. I'm excited to see where the world goes. There's so much more of a worldly vibe coming up. I think we're just unify humanity is unifying. We're becoming a global species rather than such a, like, that's a whole nother story. But I love that because I see that as coming up in so many different places. Man, wow, that is cool. So for your business, now that you're in Spain, you had your client base, how do you see yourself growing in from
Yeah.
here?
I'm in the middle of the third resurrection.
Yeah.
So I do have a client base that's still in Seattle predominantly. They're all West. No, that's not true. They're not all West Coast, but most are West Coast. And so I have my mornings that I can use for personal time, for recording my own podcast, Blasphemous Nutrition, for working on client notes, things like that. And then my client hours start at about 3, 4 p.m. and then go until 7, sometimes 8 o'clock at night. So it's a different lifestyle. And again, I'm in this position right now where I haven't quite figured out how to navigate this, but it's taking time away from my son because he doesn't get home until 5:30. So I am fortunate enough at this point that I do not have a full client load. So I only see clients, 3 days a week, and then 2 days a week I'm able to be fully present for my kid. But what I'm looking to do now over the next 3 to 5 years is to get to know Europe, right? So one of the reasons I launched my own podcast in January was so that I could reach the English-speaking world outside the Pacific Northwest. So, I mean, the East Coast is only 6 hours behind me. That's much more reasonable than the 9 hours from the Pacific Coast. And then there's all the folks in Britain and Ireland, and a lot of the Nordic countries speak English as well. So I have a new population that I don't know them, they don't know me. The first 6, 7 months, I was really feeling out, like, what are the needs of the people here? Because I can come in guns a blazing and be all Emily in Paris with my American attitude fixing the world, but that might not be what they want or need. So I'm still in this place of sitting and marinating and feeling out if what I have been specializing in, which is predominantly weight loss, metabolic health, and endurance sports nutrition, is that what I'll be doing here? Is that what these people need? The answers I'm getting are yes. This is a worldwide problem where there's room for you here. And functional medicine, functional nutrition is very much still in its infancy in Europe. And so in that sense, I've come to a place where I'm a pioneer.
Interesting. Wow. Pioneer with
So
20
there's a,
years of experience. That's great. Praise
yeah.
be.
Exactly. I'm still figuring out where to get the quality supplements that I need for my clients, but there's so much possibility here. So now that we are settled, housed, know how to do things like buy grocery stores and work the appliances in the house that we're living in, now I'm thinking, now I'm starting to expand out. Like, where are the European nutrition conferences? Where are the holistic medicine conferences? And this is where I'll be networking. This is where I'll be going out. Here in Europe, there can be a conference in London, a conference in Amsterdam, a conference in Paris, and it's very easy and very quick to get there and not very expensive. So, and I'm told most of the conferences are done in English, no matter where they're held, because that's the dominant language of the world. and of industry. So that's my plan, you know, for this year and then into next year, is really kind of getting myself known and then doing collaborations with podcasting and utilizing my podcast as a resource for expanding my voice and my reach to those who want to work with someone virtually and aren't limited by borders.
Right. Oh, beautiful. Thank you. So I guess we could wrap up with a couple last minute things. Like, if you could give yourself, go back to the beginning days and give yourself one piece of advice, what would it be? And then tell everybody where they can find you.
I think the best piece of advice I could give myself when I was first starting off is stop trying to be your father. That's not the metric of success that's going to work for you. So I engaged in a lot of overwork burnout, pick yourself up, recover, overwork burnout for the first half of my career. And it's not a path I recommend for sure. So knowing what success looks like for you, not what others say it should look like, not defining it by X figures is going to be my success point, X degrees is going to be my success point. What will make your heart happy? Because that's like, if you don't know what's going to make your heart happy, you don't know why you're going to keep getting up when life knocks you down, when things get hard. And so it's really, really important to be connected to that.
Yes. Sometimes you don't figure it out until you start. But if you just stay with that intention to pay attention and figure it out, and then have the courage to stick with it, even when times feel like they're taking you in another direction.
Yeah. If you don't have the answer, ask the question. And if you ask the question and you keep asking the question, your brain will work on it when you're not even conscious of it. And you will find the answers because you're asking the question.
I love it. Oh, so good. Okay, great. So tell us where we can connect with you.
Yeah, my private practice is vibrancenutrition.com. That's V-I-B-R-A-N-C-E. And my podcast is Blasphemous Nutrition. It's blasphemous as in not holy. And that can be found on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere where you listen to podcasts. I am also on Instagram at Vibrance Nutrition as well.
Excellent. Thank you, Amy.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me today.